Hi, welcome
Hi,
again
welcome
to
again
another episode of the Future of Solar Photovoltaics. My name is Vikram from Ventus Cables and Connectivity. Today, I'm delighted to have one of my best friends in the industry, Mr. Stefano Girolami, who I met during some hectic times at Solar Century. Stefano, welcome.
Hey, Vikram. Thank you very much. And very good to see you again and have this very interesting chat together. And thanks for the opportunity to participate in your podcast series.
Fantastic. You know, we're always busy. You're an engineer and, you know, we're always working to deadlines and we never really get to talk about anything about the general context. Stefano, are you able to give us some idea about your background, about who you are, where you come from?
Okay, sure. So I'm an engineer. I'm quite mixed up. I have a quite mixed up background also on the engineering studies. I am from Napoli, which is a city in the south of Italy. And that's where I started my studies in management engineering, which is some sort of industrial engineering course, but it also has more, you know, management and organizational and risk management sort of activities within the course. At the end of the first 3 years, getting the, call it the bachelor, the equivalent to a bachelor, I wasn't very much enthusiastic about, you know, what will come next in the university in Napoli. I was very fascinated already by renewable energy, not because I actually went through any readings or, you know, actually focused on the topic. I just, you know, I remember one day just thinking of what will be the topics of the future and among these, which one you want to build a career within, you know. So try to go off the beaten track, if you like. And renewables obviously was the obvious choice for me, because it was an international market, allowing you to travel, meet people, and at the same time was a market that was proposing something good, you know, resilient. So I really wanted to get into this market. In Italy, we didn't have many courses about renewables in universities, and in Napoli, there wasn't anything at all. I've got this 6 months spare, and I need to learn English. I need to take the test and you know, get my admission to the University of Milan. So I said, okay, probably the best way to learn English is go abroad, go to an English-speaking country, and you know, force yourself in doing that rather than
jump in the deep end straight away.
Exactly, rather than buy a book and keep talking in Italian with your friends. So just literally got graduated on probably the 15th of March or something like that. And 2 days after 17th of March 2015, I just took off to London. And that was the beginning of, call it my adult experience traveling Europe and traveling the renewable energy market. So, okay, the first 6 months, I won't spend much time, but the most important thing, I managed to start learning English, which was the target. But through the time in London, I met new people and, you know, talking to some of these, I was exposed to the possibility of doing a master in renewable energy in the UK. So I had these two choices, you know, the master in Milan, who would last for 2 years and was very Italian based anyway, or, you know, keep staying abroad, keep staying in the UK and get a master in a British university. So also perfection in English and open up also your network of people, you know, from different part of the world. So I decided to stay. I applied to a renewable energy system engineering master of science at the University of Guildford in Surrey.
Right.
Which is a very, very nice place. And that's where I went studying. I completed that master in a year at the at the beginning of 2016, and and that's it. I was out of the on the job market to get my place in the renewable energy industry. Obviously, at the very 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 right time, just the feed-in tariff just got cancelled probably 5 days before I graduated. Then I said, yes, now you're ready to go in the market. So I really struggled to find a job in renewables. It was the time of big redundancies. You definitely remember that time. It wasn't a good time for the industry. All the big players were, you know, getting, unfortunately, rid of teams and people because of the feed-in tariff. And so struggled a little bit, did a lot of, you know, small jobs here and there, just to keep me searching for a job in renewables. I actually declined any jobs you can think about, like all the, you know, all the consulting, all the more general engineering jobs. I really wanted to get into renewables. I wouldn't compromise, not even as a start. And, you know, that sort of gave me, you know, I was recompensated by that, and I eventually landed a job in Photon Energy, which is at the time was a small EPC and design firm for solar rooftop based in Reading. A small company in Reading, so I was commuting every day from London, but it was probably the best first experience in solar I could ask for. You know, I just went there. I started from the basics, learn how to use AutoCAD, learn how to do a layout, learn how to do a PLC, and, you know, learn all the small parts. The good thing about rooftops, especially small ones, is that you see the whole thing and it's quite manageable, you know, so you can actually see all the small details, and then slowly but surely you're able to scale them up quite easily. So that was a good experience. I stayed there for 8 months, almost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the feed-in tariff was hitting them as well, even though they were doing some different sort of activity at the time, which was more commercial and residential. But yeah, so time wasn't going very, very much in their favor. So I could see that they were rejecting some jobs and potentially cutting personnel as well. So I started looking undercover for some other job, probably also a bit closer to my home in London. And at the end, found Solar Sentry, which was, you know, when after uni, you go out of uni and you got your best tree, you know, that you want to land, you want to land in. And Solar Sentry was definitely my first one, like top of the list. I even applied for a office management, desk receptionist role at Solar Sentry after uni. I said, okay, if that's the way you get into Solar Sentry, I'll get through.
Get your foot in the door.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll see. But no, I met Anne Martinet, which was the person who hired me and who was my manager for the whole time, most of the time at Solar Sentry. And there was a very good feeling and connection from the first interview with Anne. And Solar Sentry was able to, you know that because we've been working together, you've been to the offices so many times, you've been, you know, cooperating with Solar Sentry even a lot earlier than I was in. And, you know, you remember that sort of vibe that you could feel entering the office in Solar Sentry. It was vibrating, was full of excitement. And, you know, you could tell people were really there to make a change, you know, and they really believed that no one was actually going to work 8 hours shift, just saying, you know, I have to go to work. I could feel that sort of, you know, excitement on the first interview already. And and I really got along with Anne from the very beginning. So that's where it started, my journey with Solar Sentry, which looking back, I think I've been probably the most lucky person to get that opportunity, because I entered Solar Sentry in a moment of change. So I entered Solar Century when they, that you've also worked on, ground mounted, but they had recently signed a deal with the IKEA for the PVs, for the PV on rooftops. And it was a set of 1 megawatt rooftop sites on the IKEAs in across the UK. And I was assigned to that. So, you know, I just learned how to do some AutoCAD and PV system. And Anle Martinez was, okay, yeah, here is your project. Actually, your portfolio of project, you just go. So as you know, okay, I've never done this, no idea how to do this, but you know, let's try. And that was incredible experience because, you know, when you are a project engineer, you have to design. Yes. Okay. That's part of the job. Obviously the big part of the job you have to design, but what I really wanted to, which is part of my, probably my character, you know, my behavioral tendencies to get in connection with people I work, you know, creating, I don't like working on compartments and this, you will see this is a constant, thing throughout my career in the different places I've been. I don't like compartments. I like everyone talking, everyone supporting each other. So my approach was, and I was the youngest, I was the least experienced, but still I was the one going there and saying, okay, I'll come to your office, to the EPC contractor rather than to the project management and say, okay, let's talk. Let's, I don't know how to do this. What do you think? You know, and we managed to create this team, project team on the IKEA, which was very exciting. There was this contractor from the north, very competent, very expert on all the electrical connection, very good contractor. The project manager was, the project managers, because I had a different one on each project, they were very, open to discussion as well on all the different topics. So that's a very good experience. I think we did a very nice job. I talked to one of the project manager lately, and he told me that the projects are, you know, going well, no particular issues. So it's a very nice experience on rooftops. I loved rooftops, but you know, as we finished the last one, Solar Century was changing in the meantime. Pan-European IPP developer. Mm-hmm. So a completely massive change, you know, in the structure, because you move from having 50% of your team in project management and engineering to having probably 10% of your team there. And then a lot more, you know, a huge amount of new people doing a different stuff. But the very key thing was that there was a culture shock, because obviously when you are an EPC, you work to get things done. So you do them at the best you can. You manage all the risk. You are very conservative sometimes. You know, you also want to save on the single pound to make the project doing. And development is a completely different story. Development is, you know, let's manage the risk as much as we want now, but then we'll see, you know, because it's down the line. So Solar Century was shifting that way, but there was a country at the time, which was the Netherlands, where instead there was construction also on top of development. So I was able to jump on a new construction project, which was Blackvede, the 110 megawatt PV project in the Netherlands, which was and I think still is Solar Century largest project in the Netherlands. It wasn't a difficult project design wise, you know, it's a fixed structure. It was quite, how can you say, it was quite, was replicated, you know, it was blocks of 2 megawatt with a trafo station in string inverters, and then replicated 54 times to get to the total capacity, because you don't have one project, but you actually have 54 projects communicating to each other through a DNO and then through a connection point. So that was a very tricky one. I learned a lot about PPC, grid compliance and SCADA system, and understanding how important that is. We built the first digital twin in Solar Century history with Blackvede. You know, we sized cables, and you know, it was very nice experience. very long, obviously, site. We started probably 2019 or end of 2018, and we went through COVID. So an extra challenge was COVID at some point, because we couldn't have, we couldn't have more than a certain number of contractors on site at the same time. And that obviously happened in the peak of construction, you know. So yeah, that experience was good. And in the meantime, I started being the reference point for technical reference point for Italy, for developing the Italian pipeline and the UK pipeline. So at some point, after probably 3 years, 3 years and a half, I found myself being the engineering manager for Italy, UK and the Netherlands.
Wow.
Having three teams there. And it was a very diverse workload, you know, because one side you had construction and pre-construction. On the other side, you had UK development, which is a lot lighter than Italian development, but is more complex on grid. And then on the other side, Italian development, which is a lot more complex on land, but less on grid. So I was getting a little bit of experience on many things. And then the moment came that Statkraft completed the acquisition of Solar Century. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, first reaction was a little bit of uncertainty in the team, because I was like, okay, what are we going to do? Solar Century was a very well built machine. It worked very well, you know, also on its international shape, you know, the different countries were communicating to each other. We built a structure which was replicated in each country. So we achieved a very nice structure, considering the huge growth we had in less than 3 years. So we, you know, a bit of uncertainty. Then we came into Statkraft, which is completely different, company. It's huge. It's very based on energy sale. So it was utility. Okay. Utility. Mm-hmm. So the real difference between a light IPP and a utility, we could see it from day one. But still, you know, we were very excited to get into Statkraft. Not lucky, but we were rewarded for what we built at Solar Century, because essentially Statkraft didn't have a so well-structured solar unit. They were more focusing on wind and hydropower. So they actually bought Solar Century to fill the gap, okay, of solar, to become one of Europe's largest solar developers as well. So we were able to fit, with no much struggle. We obviously went through a period of restructuring and adjusting, you know, and reshaping a little bit the engineering and the delivery team. But, you know, that was relatively quick. They had trust in us from day one. There was a very good team collaboration to get things done. And so that was good. And then I stayed in Statkraft. When we moved to Statkraft, I eventually was moved to Italy only, also because Italy was getting big. We were, you know, we moved from a team of two back in 2017 to a team of, now they are about 90 people. So you can imagine.
Fantastic.
By the time I left, they were already 50 people. So there was a huge growth in Statkraft Italy, and it was another very nice experience. Eventually I moved to where I am today, which is Innovo Renewables, which is again European light IPP, very much like, okay, let's call it, the ambition is very much like Solar Century. That's what we're trying to build. Okay.
Right.
And it's super exciting, because I saw Solar Century at the end, and now I'm able, you know, I was given the opportunity to build something like Solar Century from scratch. And Solar Century has always been my call it light in the dark, you know, and say, okay, how do we want to build a company? How do we want to build a team? Okay, let's look at Solar Century, what did work and also what didn't work. But, you know, let's try to get to that level of engagement of people to feeling and excitement. And so that's what we are doing now here in Innovo. I joined at the very beginning. I was probably the fifth person to join the company, other than the founder and the construction director. And today we are active on 3 countries and almost 45 people on the count, and looking to probably double up this number next year. So having a lot of fun developing in Italy, in the UK, and in Spain. So 3 countries I'm also very attached to when it comes to work.
Fantastic. I remember you coming. You were almost like a voice of calm and reason at SoloSentry. I remember the first time I visited SoloSentry offices, I think there was 2 or 3 of them. There was Waterloo, Southwark, and I think Union Street, and then Southwark.
Union Street, yeah.
And first thing that should hit me when I should visit SoloSentry was all the trophies they had won for so many different things. You know, first projects of many different kinds, their own modules, you know, developing the MCS standards, which established the industry. And so when you came, I think, when was this time? Around 2018, you joined SoloSentry?
Yeah, 2017.
So straight after the B word, straight after Brexit, when, you know, our lives were turned upside down. And you know, at that time, SoloSentry was a very hectic environment. You know, there was, I think, maybe 300 people there, and we were delivering to Chile, you know, tense negotiations and first experience of reverse auctions. And we were working, I think, with you on B&Q and IKEA.
Yes.
And I think lots of people were having a burnout because they had delivered so much in such a short period of time. Between 2012 and 2016, most of the megawatts were delivered.
And then so the lots big of monsters in Spain, the 500 megawatt in Spain, just to, you know, when you think, okay, we can calm down a little bit. Just gigawatt in construction across Europe, yes.
Again, so we haven't recovered from Chile, but we're doing 500 megawatts in Spain, and we should do a site visit to B&Q because we need to do some batteries and do some things for IKEA. So I think if you don't make any mistakes, it means you don't do any work. And so people deliver so much at SoloSentry, and they were almost the industry in itself, that when you came, it was like everyone had red faces because they were either tired or worried about what mistakes they don't know about or anything like that. And so when we were very happy to start working with you, Stefano, because at this time we started to integrate a chartered electrical engineer with us as well, Stephen McFadden, to focus more on the development conversation, to look at the energy values rather than only pence per meter or pence per watt. You know, we started to really look at what makes a good string sizing, what makes a good
40p target with Dave, all those sessions about getting to 40p per watt peak, the target that obviously we couldn't achieve because after that there was Brexit and shortage and logistics issues. Mm-hmm. So never achieved that, but we were working towards that.
The magic with SoloSentry was we would come and they would, as you said earlier, there would always be a buzz in the office, and we would have a whiteboard and everyone would draw ideas on how they can achieve cost reduction without compromising on quality. So we would look at, you know, either adding more modules to a string or looking at different inverter technologies. Even we were close to developing a solar bus solution at that time. From your perspective, you know, at which point did you think, you know, solar is a serious technology? You know, this is actually serious power plants and not only playing around with a few modules.
I think I always had the impression, obviously I'm young in this market, call it, okay, because it's 8 years, less than 8 years now. So I've always had the impression, or at least the feeling, that we were doing serious stuff. But I agree with you. You know, your question is, it's right, because there is this transition from solar. You know, it's still now a little bit less, but especially at the beginning of my career, when people were asking me, you know, people like friends or family, I say, what's your job? How do you do? And I said, okay, I'm an engineer in renewables. And they were saying, I like to install some modules on my rooftop. I said, yeah, but I don't actually do that. You know,
right.
I do power plants. And they were, why? You can do a power plant. So it's completely off the record that solar was energy source, you know, and an electricity source. So obviously now there's a lot of hype around this market because of climate change, because of all the targets and stuff. So people now start to understand that solar is a power plant, but still we're not there yet. But also in the industry, you know, in the industry, we know that solars are power plant and it's a serious source of energy, it's a serious technology. But also within the industry, I think we need still to do the next step, which is my belief, and it's not just a power plant, it's the future of energy. Like we're mm-hmm. now shaping what will be the equivalent of, you know, fossil fuel industry today. You know, we're looking at 10, 15 years timeline, and we need to replicate that model, the fossil fuel. So that means, you know, we can't still go around and say, no, we're just doing the right things. You know, we want to put modules there. No, you know, we need to embark on more serious conversations and brainstorming on how we expect to make this work, and starting from the key aspect, which is the grid. You know, we, you know, we sort of saying, okay, we want to make a nice dinner, and we go buy all the fancy stuff, but then we don't have a table. So, you know, for dinner, so what do we do? You know, we can think that solar is serious as much as you want, but if we don't start talking about the grid, how to change the grid, how to digitalize the grid, how to think of solar in a different network, which is not just connect the project and inject energy. You know, you could do that up to probably now. You can't do it anymore from tomorrow on, because the grid is not able to take it, and it's not the way forward. You have to think, okay, what's going to be in 15 years the electricity and energy market and distribution networks? Okay, it will be digital. Perfect. That means our solar needs to be digital. Okay, let's focus on digitalization. It needs to be constant. Okay, let's focus on battery storage. You know, we need to think of solar and wind, obviously, in a different scale, as the energy of the future and everything that you know, brings along. And that means also lobbying, go and influence governments, go and influence the European Union, go and influence big industry lobbies, because, you know, we can't compete. That what is clear now today is that we still can't compete with our big competitor, which is the fossil fuel industry. We want to play the same game. We want to get them off the scene. Replace them in energy production, but we're not at that level. They have lobbies, they have power, they have all structure, which is mm-hmm. energy market. They built and they can control. So we need to get there. That's probably the greatest challenge of solar for becoming really serious. You know, as you said. Technology is the technology is there, is great, is amazing, it's simple, it's modular, it's cheap, it's perfect. I mean, you know, nothing more you can ask from a technology, it's just perfect. It's how to integrate that technology into modern world that it's really the challenge, I guess.
And interesting, you mentioned earlier that you're young in this market, but you know, you've delivered 110 megawatt projects. You know, some people have never done that in their entire lives, to give you an idea. Some countries don't have 110 megawatts of solar to put things into perspective, you know. And there's lots of industry terms, you know, because a small industry and it has had a lot of boom and bust cycles. One of them is the solar coaster, which you experienced firsthand with Brexit and with the feed-in tariffs. But the other specific industry term is relevant to Source Entry is if you see somebody at another company, they introduce their colleagues like he was a solar centurion. You know, so this is the respect that Source Entry has in the market, and you said some, you know, advanced things like a digital twin for Vlag Verde. You know, these are things that people only dream about now because the standards have fallen.
Building,
and
we were building it by end, you know, with five computers. Today you have softwares that try to do that. We were literally building it by hand, and it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare, but it was good.
Yeah, but I remember seeing very precise drawings, and everything was so neat, and most of us, so Sentry has built a really well-performing site even today. You know, everybody has issues, but generally, you know, when you're on a SoulCentury site, because everything's clean, the roads are nicely made, and everything seems very professional. You know, usually there isn't a lot of work to do when it's repowering, because it was a SoulCentury site. But after SoulCentury decided not EPC anymore and started to become a developer, lots of new companies entered the market and already disappeared, because, you know, to build up processes which took almost 20 years for SoulCentury, and then to do it in the lockdown after Brexit, during an energy war, you know, working remotely, you know, it's fantastic, all this technology we have, but it doesn't replicate the buzz we had coming to Farringdon or Southwark or Union Street and going in, and we would have just our little part with the cables or the lugs or connectors, and we would be very busy with it, but there would be 50 other people having meetings about something different. You know, that kind of environment, it hasn't really replicated itself. So from your point of view, what were the key, without talking about anything confidential, there was also Nearstar as well. I think this one might have been a zinc mine or something like this. What was the key learning points from Wede for you?
Wede was probably, you know, looking at construction and design, was pay attention to details you are not an expert in. Like, you know, we were very good on SCADA and electrical and structural and mechanical and cables and all, you know, and we had all the right partners, including yourself on, you know, and Steve, and very good conversations with everyone. We weren't very specialized on civil. But still, we had to do a lot of civil works there because we have to bury some ditches and redirect them. So bury the existing ditches and then open new ones and then build roads across, you know, in between those ditches. And we didn't probably take seriously into account the impact that humidity and water could have. A big learning point, because, you know, ditches that we buried were completely soaked all the time, you know, with water on the surface. So we were having also problems with structures and installation and also storage of modules, pallet and stuff, because it was too wet. Not the wet that you know on a solar site, was probably lake, because essentially the terrain was going down and the water was going up. And that was because we didn't give enough time, resting time to the land to compact, you know, before actually working on it. And the same happened to the new ditches that we opened, essentially raining, and then all the land on the two sides was falling within, so blocking the water, and we had hydraulic problems, and then we also had civil problem, because we had to, you know, reopen the ditch, and the roads were just built next to the ditch. So as the land would slide from the, you know, from the core, from the sides of the ditch, then the road will get not stable. So most of the issues were on the civil side of things, and we weren't expert on that. But we, instead of, you know, probably hiring a civil person to do the job right and take probably a month more to look into details and stuff, we, you know, we went quite confident on that and said, okay, no, you know what, we can do it. And then we had issues. Nothing too bad. It was manageable, but, you know, if you want a perfect site, then you have to.
All right, so the lesson is to hire the right people for the right jobs. You know, so hindsight is 2020. You know, as I saw, essentially, so many things were happening at the same time. It was remarkable, the speed of the productivity. And then you went to Stackroff, Italy, and you've moved on from there. What persuaded you to start your new challenge now? What was the point where you decided you need to make your next career move?
I'm an enthusiastic type of person, so I like challenges, and that's the real start of it, because that's what makes you consider, okay, something while you are in Statkraft Italy. Because I was in Statkraft Italy, the company was nice, the people were amazing, I had good friends and amazing colleagues, and everything was fine. I was engineering manager of one of the largest company in Europe, and so Statkraft Italy the destiny of Statkraft Italy is to be one of the key players in the Italian market on the long term. So everything was, perfect. This is why would you even consider something different? Because was really something different. Wasn't the same position on a likewise position in a different company. I would have never looked at anything like that. It was a different experience. It was okay. You've seen good companies built. Let's try and build one from scratch. Okay, let's see what would you do better. How would you approach, all the things, little things that you didn't love, you can make them better. You can try, and if you don't try, this is the industry of trying. There's no set rules in this industry. Everything changes from day to from one day to the next. So you really perfectionate the art of improvising and putting everything to question every day. And so I went, okay, let's try do it new. Let's try do it all the things that I've, all those little things that I think are right, from management style to how a company should work, and initiatives within the company, how projects should be designed, how development should be done. Let's try. Let's see if I'm, if I can be right, if I can find out something more interesting and that works better. So that was the big drive. And so far so good. I'm having a lot of fun, and I'm doing a lot of good stuff, and that's what I try to do. It's come here and try to do development in a different way than what I've seen in the years, because I was always coming from a utility or IPP which had both construction and development at the same time, especially in Solar Sentry. Less in Statkraft, but the approach was still that. So the engineering team is a delivery team, and that means that when you do development, and the development call engineering for support. But engineering is not there. It's not there developing the project. Okay, what does that mean? That it's a compart you know it's It's a compartment, as I was telling you before. There's development and then there is engineering. And what's the main issue with that? Then you get to construction, to delivery of projects, and you have projects which are not, you're not able to build. You can't build them costly. It just doesn't work. And it could work in a first wave of development where it was very aggressive and you had nothing to lose. You could create value literally out of nothing, sign a land, ask for a grid, and sell it for 25,000 euro megawatt. Your job done. Make a good amount of money, and then you move on to the next one. But then we're moving to a more mature stage of the market, especially in Italy, but also in the UK is way ahead. Obviously, you need to do things right, especially if you are an IPP. You need to make sure that what you think of today, what you develop today, then is the way you want to build it, which doesn't mean you won't have problems, because you know very well that doesn't matter what you do, you will have problems in construction. But let's try to minimize them, and this way you either, so it's a project team that starts from origination. So you find a land, sign a land, and request a grid up to energize the site, and you have the same project team going along the way together. And so what comes out of this quality? Quality is the
And
key.
would you say Innova Renewables, are they a developer, IPP, or an EPC? What is their core function?
We are a developer, so we originate and develop projects up to ready to build, and when we get to ready to build, we also we are a, call it a light IPP. Okay, so we get a share of the project depending on the country and the deal we have in place. A little bit like Solar Century at the time with Encavis, no, which was a very positive and successful sort of partnership. Encavis would finance the project, Solar Century would of the asset at the end, something like that. Okay, so call it a light IPP. Okay, probably that's the best definition you can give to Innovo today.
Fantastic. And you're in a good position to work as a developer because you've had hands-on APC experience yourself. From the start to finish, you know what's required, especially your ideas about developing a digital twin. So there's some kind of traceability, tracking, planning. It's something way ahead of what normally goes on when there isn't even a design until the EPC contract's signed, and everyone just runs like crazy, and then you hope that you end up with something in the end. So, in terms of the future of photovoltaics, and you're a very talented engineer as well. Do you have some ideas about in terms of module technology, N types or P types? In terms, what would be your ideal solar farm in the future?
Look, what I like about solar is the modularity of it. Okay, so I'm a fan of string inverter. No need to hide. It's definitely my preferred choice for many reasons. It's modular, but it's also it opens up a series of opportunities on site management and SCADA and O&M, which you can't have on a stress on a central inverter. Which for me, I think, for what I told you before, the digitalization, digital twin, thinking of this solar power plant, embedded in the system, communicating to the rest of the different items of the system, for me, stringing back on design. Still, I've designed and I designed something with central inverter sometimes also to diversify a little bit also the risk, of doing always the same thing. Module wise, I can see, also talking to suppliers, to module suppliers, I can see they will really bet on they will really bet in the future on efficiency. So you might expect, I think we've reached the peak in terms of dimension. I don't think we will go any bigger than that, or probably not much bigger. If you think at the modules we were installing in Vlachtvede and look at some of the 700 watt peak modules on the market now, there's just double the dimensions. I don't think we will try from that again. I think there will be a lot of work done on the efficiency mostly. But yeah, I like it that it's modular. So, easy design, string inverters, SCADA, asset management. I like that. And one nice thing is probably thinking of solar, because so there's one big thing. Solar is built on land. Land is mostly agricultural. And so, it's not either one or the other. There is something called Agri-PV. We actually made the name official when in through the work stream with Solar Power Europe back in 2018, 2019. I was in Solar Century at the time. We defined that name. We defined what, Agri-PV should be looking like. In Italy, we are I feel quite confident to say we are very much advanced on definition on Agri-PV. We have some technical norms, some guidelines, and et cetera. It's a good definition. That's, again, when you develop because you want to develop and create value, then you say, okay, I'm doing Agri-PV, whatever that means. If you do it in a quality way, then it's not that easy. you really have to think about. So probably one thing that I'm eager to focus on and to learn and to study is structure, you know, mounting structures, how we can adapt mounting structure to agricultural activities. Sometimes, you know, it just means higher structures. Sometimes just means wider pitches. But it's, you know, I don't believe it's just that. I believe we can do a lot better than that. So that's probably the evolution in technology or in equipment for a solar PV plant that I'm really focusing at the moment.
In terms of bifacial modules, do you see that having a positive impact on agri PV?
Yeah.
Because there are people that have 650 watt monofacials, there's now bifacials in the market. Do you have a view on bifacial
modules?
Win-win.
It's a win-win, right? in any type of PV. You know, the cost is almost the same now, so there's no brainer. In agriculture especially, because the real downside, which is advertised against agri-PV, is the shading created by the modules. Obviously, with a bifacial, you sort of reduce a little bit of that shading, compared to a monofacial, which is completely, blocking light. And at the same time, agriculture is a good way to control an important parameter, which is the albedo. So it's a win-win. So you can actually, improve and optimize crop selection also based on the reflection of the light, and so improve your yield. It's a win-win. You need to study
albedo is the reflected light, power generated from the reflected light, right?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. It's what gets reflected for whatever the light hits on the ground. So if you have a very nice and dry British grass, then you will have a very high albedo, or snow has a very high albedo. Water has the worst albedo, or, anything that is wet as a worse albedo. So you can play with that and improve both sides.
Fantastic. And we're coming towards the end of our conversation. Before we finish, I want to get your view on the market penetration of PV in the Italian market, in the British market, and in Spain. What percentage of energy do you think can be provided by solar power by itself? And do you have some ideas about DC coupling or AC coupling of batteries with solar?
Okay. Yeah, I think the two questions are very much related, because, getting an understanding of the second question, so on coupled batteries, will give you also a specific answer for the first question. So how much can we penetrate solar into the energy mix? They're very much dependent. You can, without battery storage, solar can penetrate the market up to a certain point, because otherwise it's not feasible for the grid. So if you look at the targets for 55 in Europe, or, all the targets that you see, it's literally impossible to do without battery storage. I think solar can power up to, 60-70% of the energy mix at regime. So in 10 years, probably time. But before, we need to make sure that that energy can flow to the grid, and, and that we don't sacrifice the grid. And so that's where battery storage comes in. Battery storage is an amazing market today, because it's determined to be the market of the next 5 to 10 years, but still is not clear. So you see a lot of wild investment, not regulated, and that's very interesting. So DC, we don't have much DC coupling today in Italy, for example, on the horizon, because Terna, the TSO, doesn't care about specifically about a flat curve of energy. They much rather prefer having a battery storage standalone that you give to them. So you sign a CPA, a capacity purchase agreement, and they can manage that capacity to adjust the grid. And so they tell you, with solar, we don't care. Do it the way you like. The energy production curve, it's whatever you like. But, you need to give me storage. so that I can control that. AC coupling could be interesting to look at today to avoid curtailment for PV sites in Italy, because it's essentially the grid might not able to take up all your power, so might curtail you, and that's where you might benefit from, you know, an AC coupled battery storage. But it's not necessarily economically feasible, you know, because it has a cost and it's not absorbed by the PV, because it's only the PV that you have to look as a revenue.
Fantastic. So batteries are very important for a lot of change with the TSO or transmission system operator in the UK as well. I think parts of National Grid might have been nationalized by the government to speed up the national significant infrastructure projects. So there's more than 19 gigawatt peak in the planning documents now. And there's even one gigawatt peak solar farms being planned. So if you think about working back in the UK, you know, the times could get very, very interesting. But I've certainly enjoyed this conversation, Stefano, and I will listen again to your comments and think deeply about it and see how this determines the future for us. And so with that, Stefano, thank you very much for joining us today, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much. This was very, very nice opportunity to, you know, to talk about all the interesting topics of this amazing industry. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thanks, Stefano.
Speak soon. Bye.